I wanted to talk in greater depth about mindfulness, because this is one of the important controlling faculties which creates success in meditation, or if it's not fully understood and fully practiced, you can waste a lot of time in your meditation. So the quality of mindfulness is what I'm going to focus this morning's talk on. I have mentioned much about mindfulness already in some of the earlier talks in question time. In particular, I like to use a simile of a person who's guarding a door or guarding a gate. I did mention that simile in the terms of a bouncer at a nightclub. The simile of a gatekeeper was something which was actually used by the Buddha to describe mindfulness, and it gives the full meaning of the term. It's not just being aware and being awake and being fully conscious of what's occurring around you. It's also being able to guide that consciousness, if you like, on certain areas, and being informed, having some aspect of wisdom about what you're supposed to be doing. And those are like the two aspects of mindfulness which I encourage you to keep in mind: the aspect of mindfulness of like awareness, and also the aspect of mindfulness of remembering the instructions. In the Buddhist suttas, very often the same word, sati, is used for this awareness and also memory. A person who's got great sati, what we translate usually as mindfulness, is a person who's got a good memory, because these two things go together in the mind. And you can understand how they go together. If you pay attention to what you're doing, if you're fully aware of what you're doing, it creates an imprint in the mind. It does become easy to remember. For example, if you're in danger, if on the way to the retreat that you're very close to having an accident, because of the danger, the mindfulness becomes extremely strong and sharp. This is a life-threatening situation. And because of that sharpness of mindfulness in a potential accident, you remember it very easily, very clearly. In fact, sometimes when you go back home or you go to sleep that night, you can't forget it. It keeps coming up again. This is the way that when you are paying attention to what you're doing, when you're really aware of what you're doing, then you tend to remember it. And this is why these two things go together. If you have a gatekeeper who has developed awareness, you'll also be aware of the instructions which they're being given. If you're aware of the instructions you're being given, you're liable to remember them. And this is why when we practice our meditation, in order to encourage mindfulness, in order to develop it, you should always give yourself clear instructions. And the teacher's job is also to give clear instructions. And that way that you're assisting the development of this thing we call mindfulness. It's why also that I teach in these very clear stages, stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, etc. Because when you make it a methodical training in meditation, when each stage is very clear, it becomes possible to give your gatekeeper the same clarity of instruction. And this is what you should do. At the beginning of the meditation, when you start stage 1, you should actually tell yourself, there's a gatekeeper inside, that which can be aware of what's happening and can choose where to put that awareness. And you tell that gatekeeper that now is the time to be aware of the present moment. Now is the time to be aware of the present moment. Now is the time to be aware of the present moment. Tell yourself 3 times. Do you know what it's like if you have to repeat it you're much more likely to remember it. You know what happened when you were at school? If you couldn't spell a word, you had to write it out 100 times, and then you'd never forget it after that. Because when you repeat it, it takes more effort. It's harder to do. You have to force the mind a little bit more. And mindfulness has to become stronger there. What's easy to do doesn't take much mindfulness. What is difficult to do takes much more mindfulness. So if you make it a little bit difficult for yourself when you're giving yourself that instruction, I will be aware of the present moment. I'll be aware of the present moment. I will be aware of the present moment. You say to yourself 3 times. Now, with the gatekeeper, like any other servant or worker, you don't have to keep on giving the same instruction every second or two. In this way of developing mindfulness, you give that instruction to the gatekeeper 3 times at the beginning, and then you let the gatekeeper do their task. You trust the gatekeeper to know what they're doing. In the same way, if you've got a servant or a worker, you say, go and build me a barbecue in the back just over there, and you give very clear instructions, you give a plan. You don't have to be watching over the builder every second. If you've given clear instructions and you trust the builder, you can let them get on with it and you can go and do something else. Here, you just let the mind get on with the job of being in the present moment. Do not keep interfering with the mind. Give it clear instructions and then let go and watch. This is a way that you establish mindfulness with these clear instructions. And you find that your mind is everyone else's mind. If it once is given clear instructions, will tend to do what it's told. It will obviously make mistakes now and again. It will sometimes not go straight to the present moment immediately, or sometimes it will go to the present moment and then wander off again. But that instruction which you've given it will mean that as soon as it starts to wander off into the past or the future, there is something which remembers mindfulness, remembers the instructions. Mindfulness knows it's not following the instructions, and so mindfulness puts the attention back into the present moment. For you, the onlooker, is something which is automatic. You don't need to choose to do it. It happens automatically because mindfulness has been instructed. In the same way that once you've given the gatekeeper instructions, you can just watch the gatekeeper do all this work and you don't have to do any more instructing. You can just watch the gatekeeper do the work. This is trusting the mind, knowing the mind, knowing its nature, and working with that nature. As I mentioned to a couple of people in interviews, to really play around with this mind and know its capabilities, one of the first things which I was told in my meditation retreat as a student, the first meditation retreat, was that no need to set your alarm for 4 o'clock in the morning. I think actually we're getting up 5 o'clock in the morning at that retreat. It was a soft retreat. And he said, just determine, tell yourself before you go to bed at night, I'm going to get up at 5 to 5. Just 5 minutes before someone was going to ring the bell. But don't set your alarms. And that was the first time I ever tried that. It worked every morning. I told myself very clearly and carefully as I went to sleep, I would get up at 5 to 5. I didn't need to sort of look at my clock. Is it 5 to 5 yet? I could actually trust in the mind. And when it woke up and I opened my eyes and looked at my clock, it was 5 minutes to 5, give or take 2 minutes. It's incredible just how the mind works. I don't know how it does it, how it remembers, but it did. And in exactly the same way, if you give yourself clear instructions, if you program your mind, Now's the time to watch the breath. Sorry, now's the time to watch the present moment. Be in the present moment. Be in the present moment. Be in the present moment. That's all you need to do. Then you let the mind do the work. It's also important when you're instructing the gatekeeper to know not just what you're supposed to be doing, but also what you're not supposed to be doing. In other words, to know the goal, and also to know the dangers. It's important to know the dangers as well as the goal, because this is like the gatekeeper knowing who's allowed in and also who's not allowed in. He needs to be very clear about both types of people. If he just has a list of who's allowed in, hasn't got a list of who's not allowed in, then the gatekeeper could easily make mistakes. So in the first of these stages of meditation, the goal of who's allowed in is just anything in the present moment. That can be the sound of a bird, it can be sound of a truck in the distance, it can be the wind going past, it can be someone coughing or banging the door. It doesn't matter, that's part of the present moment awareness. If it's happening now, it can be the breath, it can be a samadhi nimitta, it can be a jhana, that's all part of the present moment. So be very clear, sort of, what's allowed in. But also, be very clear what is not allowed in. What are the dangers to present moment awareness? And those dangers, again, is any thought, any perception, any view of the past or the future, looking back or looking forward. It's important to know those dangers, to articulate them very clearly. Sometimes when I make my resolutions, I actually include the danger in the resolution. I'll be aware of the present moment, but I will not go off into the past or the future. I'll be aware of the present moment, but I'll disregard the past or the future. I'll be aware of the present moment, and I will disregard the past and the future. Saying that to yourself, instructing about the dangers as well as the goals, helps mindfulness do its task. Because what happens then is when the dangers to that stage arise, mindfulness knows this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And mindfulness discards that present moment, or so that discards that past or that future thought or perception. This is what happens. This is the nature of the mind if you program it properly in this way. In the same way, the second stage of silent awareness in the present moment, you got the goal there of silence in the present, and the danger is inner chatter, inner thought. So you tell the mind, that's what you've got to look after, that's the enemy, that's the danger. And you tell the mind very clearly at the beginning of that stage, I will be just silently aware of the present moment, and I will discard all inner chatter. I will be silently aware in the present moment. I will discard all chatter. I will be silently aware of the present moment, and I will discard all inner chatter. That way you establish mindfulness. You give it a chance because you instruct it very clearly. In the third stage, you instruct it, I'll be aware of the breath in the present moment. And one of the dangers is everything other than the breath, which includes the sounds outside, the feelings in the body, people coughing, thoughts about anything else, about lunch or dinner or whatever. Everything else other than the breath is the danger. So you tell yourself, I'll be aware of the breath in the present moment and discard all other perceptions or thoughts. I'll be aware of the breath in the present moment and discard all other perceptions and thoughts. I'll be aware of the breath in the present moment and discard all other perceptions and thoughts. telling yourself very clearly what you're supposed to be doing. And if you do that, tell yourself very clearly, again, you find you can let the mind do its work. You just look on, and you find that when a thought other than the breath comes up, when you're perceiving, say, a sound of a lawnmower outside or whatever, straight away the mind knows it's not supposed to be doing this. You're training the mind in mindfulness, and the mind turns away automatically. It's fascinating to watch the mind when it is trained. It does it without you telling it again, because it's already been told. It remembers the instructions. It knows what it's doing. And the meditation becomes smooth and starts to have the appearance of effortlessness. It's not effortless. You're putting the effort in, but at the right times, at the times when it's really going to bear fruit. Just the same way as like growing a garden or growing a tree. There are times when you put effort in. You plant the seed in the ground. Then you water it, you fertilize it. But most of the time, if you're growing a tree, it's just to guard it, to make sure that nothing interferes with it. The seed has got the instructions. It just needs to be given a chance. You give instructions to the mind, and then just give it a chance. Don't keep interfering with it. Don't keep prodding it and pushing it and telling it to do things. Because otherwise, after a while, it will just rebel. Leave me alone, like I'm trying to do my job. Get out of the way, says the mind to you. And the fourth stage of the meditation, it's the mindfulness is to be told, be aware of the whole breath in every moment. And be aware of other things intruding on this smooth, continuous awareness of the breath. Be aware of the whole breath continually, and just disregard anything else other than the breath in every moment. Be aware of the whole breath and disregard everything else. If you do that and tell yourselves very carefully and clearly, again, you're giving mindfulness a chance. You only have to tell yourself that three times at the beginning and just see what happens. If you've got a very forgetful mindfulness inside of you, in other words, you give yourself these instructions and after 1 or 2 minutes you find you're just drifting off in goodness knows where, then there's two reasons. Either that you did not carefully tell yourself, you didn't instruct yourself carefully enough, clearly enough, what you're supposed to be doing, or that you really have got very weak mindfulness. If you have really got weak mindfulness, it means that maybe every 3 or 4 minutes to repeat the instructions. But no need to repeat the instructions every 10 or 15 seconds. It's the repeating of the instructions so often which causes a disturbance in your meditation, which never gives meditation a chance to work, which eventually just gives rise to restlessness and a lack of peace. If you give yourself the instructions very carefully, then you find you will remember them. So this is little by little, you arouse mindfulness, you develop it, and you will notice that the thing we call mindfulness, the awareness, starts off with a huge area to be aware of, just the present moment. There's a huge amount of things you can be conscious of in the present moment. And then it's refined down bit by bit. Instead of anything in the present moment, just that which is silent in the present moment, and discarding all that is chatter and thought. Then, instead of just silence in the present moment, you're discarding everything other than the silent awareness of the breath in the present moment. And that breath can be just aware of the in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. You're discarding everything other than full awareness of the breath, from the very beginning of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath. very beginning of the out-breath to the end of the out-breath. The difference between stage 3 and stage 4, the just awareness of the breath and the full awareness of the breath, is that when you're just aware of the breath, you just have to notice just the part of the breath going in. And once you've noticed it going in, then the mind can go off wandering somewhere else, but it has to be home again to catch the breath going out. And once it's caught the breath going out, or seen it going out, then it can go off again and think about other things until it has to come home again to catch the breath going in again. It's still got places where it can go. It's still got some width. It's still got some freedom other than being with the breath. You can, at this third stage, be aware of other things as well as the breath. But for full awareness of the breath, you need to completely lock the awareness into the breathing and be aware of nothing else. That's why that fourth stage is so important in this meditation, because it's where that you really grab hold of your meditation object. You have continuous awareness with it. The awareness is refined onto one small area of existence, just your breath. This is what we're doing with the awareness, with the mindfulness. We're restricting it. Instead of allowing it to go all over the place, we're focusing it in. And it's with the focusing in of awareness that awareness starts to become strong. It's like building up a fire. It's like using a magnifying glass to warm something up. It's concentrating all the energies on one thing. And this ability to sustain the mindfulness, to sustain the awareness, to sustain the attention, is called samadhi. Samadhi, if you want a very good definition of it, is sustaining of attention on one thing. No need to call it concentration, because concentration misses so much of what's really important in the meaning of samadhi. Samadhi is the ability to sustain attention on one thing. And many people can do that in their life. I used to give a similar like of a doctor, like a surgeon, performing an operation. I talk to surgeons, and sometimes they spend hours just on an operation. And they're on their feet all the time, but they say they never feel tired. Because they have to sustain their attention on the end of their knife, or the scalpel. Because if they don't, the person down there is going to die. Just one little mistake, one lapse of mindfulness, and they can get sued, they can get lose their job for killing their patients. Surgeons performing operations, they have quite a lot of samadhi. They sustain their attention on what they're doing, and they don't feel any pains or aches in their legs standing there, because all their attention is on the end of their knife. They can become very skilled, and also it can, for some surgeons, become very peaceful. They do actually get into states of samadhi, because they have to be right there in every moment. It's difficult at first, but once they get into it, it becomes actually very pleasant. There's one thing in the world that they're concerned with, just this part of the operation which is happening now. If it's really important, you can do it. Which is the other way I like to teach samadhi, is with each of these stages, always know the danger. And if it's the danger of some other object in the mind other than the goal of that particular stage, if you finally do stage 1 and you're always going off into the past or the future, if you go stage 2 and you're always chattering, if you're stage 3 and you're always thinking of other things other than the breath, whatever your danger is, see if in a meditation retreat like this you can identify your main dangers in every stage of this meditation. If it is the thinking mind, thought, which creeps up on you and grabs hold of you, remember that simile I keep on saying of the snake. You can use other similes if you like. Now, if you've lost quite a few points in the last few months because of radar traps, then you know that radar traps is a severe danger to you. And so it means that you're always, when you're driving, very mindful of the speed limits. If something is a danger to you, you become very mindful of it. If it's really a danger. In each stage of the meditation, the radar traps of the meditation, speeding along thinking, snakes about to sort of strangle you, whatever it is, taking away your success in meditation. Identify your main danger in each of these stages, your main obstacle. And at the beginning of each stage in this meditation, when you say, for example, just the silent awareness of the present moment, I'll be silently aware of the present moment, I'm not going to get involved in thinking. Silently aware of the present moment, not going to get involved in thinking. Silently aware of the present moment, not going to be involved in thinking. And then at the end of that, say, the snake I've got to really be careful of is, let's say, thoughts about food. That's the snake I've got to really be concerned about. Thoughts about food. Whatever your particular snake is, keep a lookout for that one. Be wary of it. And if you instruct yourself at the beginning what your particular snake is, and you instruct yourself clearly, seriously, then you find that part of mindfulness throughout your meditation will be a lookout for that which is truly dangerous to you. And much of the problems in meditation do not originate at the beginning of the meditation. They creep in to your meditation. I always used to teaching meditation at Nalamala, just give a little technique of to new meditators. I'd tell them, okay, just breathe in and breathe out three times and watch every breath, just for three breaths, that's all. And all the new meditators could do that without any problem whatsoever. They could watch three breaths, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, with full awareness. And say, now just do that for, not three breaths, for 3,000 breaths. Do it for a whole hour. And they couldn't do it. Why can we do three breaths, but we can't do, say, 300 breaths? And the reason is we can start out without any problems, with full awareness, but we cannot sustain that awareness. These snakes, these problems, they creep in, usually after we've begun meditation. When you begin meditation, it can be very clear. When the bell goes, wow, where did that hour go? You were snoozing. Or you were just thinking about so many different things. You can start out watching the breath, and you can finish out thinking about your holidays overseas. Somehow, somewhere, the snakes come in, the radar traps got you. And so if you psych yourself up, you tell yourself what your problem, main problem is, you've been meditating long enough now, you know your problems, the thing which you've really got to look out for. Psych yourself up by saying, look out for this one. If it's thoughts, which is your big problem, if it's giving orders, is your big problem, say, watch out for that one, really watch out for it. And then when you're meditating, you'll find that an order is about to be given, and you spot it coming, you say no. You cut it off before it actually gets to you. You sidestep the snake before it gets its claws around you. You slam on the brakes before the speed trap flashes. You've avoided it because you've seen it coming. And this is where mindfulness starts to really kick in and become very sharp and become very powerful. It learns to sidestep the dangers. You're given clear instructions, you sidestep the dangers, and the meditation really starts to become deep. Mindfulness does become the controlling faculty of this meditation. And it's okay to say what mindfulness is, but these are clear instructions in how to be mindful, how to set it up, how to program yourself so you're fully mindful. Of course, the other factor of mindfulness is energy. In each of these stages, you need energy. And the way that energy is aroused is by learning to put everything you have into what you're doing now. Don't keep anything back for the next moment. It's one of the mistakes of people, especially with mental energy. They think, well, if I really push myself hard now, if I put a lot of energy into this moment, I'll have nothing back, nothing left for the next moment. It doesn't work that way with the mind. You actually rouse energy, you initiate energy. The more energy you put into this moment, the more you've got for the next moment, and the more you've got for the moments afterwards. You actually build up energy. This is mental energy. With physical energy, it is the opposite. You've only got a certain amount, a certain store of physical energy. So if you use some up now, you haven't got some for later on. With mental energy, there is just a limitless store. And if you put a lot of energy into what you're doing right now, you find the next moment, the next 5 minutes, the next hour, whatever, you're still awake, you're still alive, you're still sharp, because you've built up that energy. It's why Ajahn Chah always used to say, whatever you're doing, put 100% effort into whatever you're doing. If it's listening to a talk, 100% effort, attention to listening. If you're sitting meditation, 100% effort into sitting. If you're walking, 100% effort into walking. If you're eating your lunch, 100% effort into eating the lunch. And if you're resting, 100% effort into resting. Really sleep as perfectly as you can. Whatever you do, 100% effort into it. Then you find that you build up this energy. You're awake, you're alive. If, however, you think, oh, I don't really need to put energy into this sit, then you get dull. Then the next sit is dull. And even eating the food is dull. You don't enjoy it so much. It's also when you're eating food, the mindfulness says, see how much you can notice of what you're doing. What's your danger when you're eating food? Usually maybe thinking about something else. Whatever it is you're doing, know what you're supposed to be doing. Put full effort into it. Know the dangers and avoid those dangers. So you can be fully aware and fully mindful throughout this retreat. And you build up that mindfulness. And it gets very sharp. It becomes very much like that you've realized you've been living like in a world which has been very dim, with not many lights. And as you get more and more mindful, it's like someone turns up the lights in the room, like the sun comes out and becomes like brilliant. That's why that being mindful becomes very joyful. It's very pleasant to be mindful, because you see so much more of what's around you, so much more of what's inside of you. It's like spotlighting reality. It just really starts to open out to you. Not only just see the colours, you see the shapes, see everything there, and it's beautiful, it's wonderful. That's why when mindfulness really starts to get strong, it's very conducive to a lot of happiness and bliss. People who aren't very mindful, who are dull, who cultivate dullness, who sleep a lot, develop depression. When you live in a grey world, I went to England some years ago, and every time I go to England, it's always goes in November and December, January time. And I still remember, it's just so miserable, because it's just so grey there. The sun is sort of so far in the north, it's not somewhere, because it's the winter time. About 10 or 11 o'clock it starts to get light. This is in the morning. By 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like evening time, it starts to get very, very dull. And very often it's, you know, the clouds are all grey because it's in this drizzle, and all the buildings are grey. And yeah, the street is grey. You look up at the sky, it's grey. It's grey from the top to the bottom. And you look at the people there, what clothes do they wear? All grey suits and grey overcoats. And look at the expressions on their face, it's grey. You know what tea they drink? Oh, grey. It's all grey. It's very miserable. And that's, you can understand why a person with very little mindfulness is like that. It's just like living in sort of London in the winter time. It's just grey and miserable. There's no sort of light, there's no energy there. You don't see very much. But when you've got like a lot of mindfulness, it's like going out and it's a brilliant sunshine. Just, it's energizing, it's beautiful. There's a lot of happiness there. And if you can develop that mindfulness, that brightness of the mind, seeing deeply into things, really being aware of just a small part of the world, your mind, it's brilliant, it's wonderful, it's amazing. So this is the other simile of mindfulness. It's like turning up the lights in the mind. Being more and more and more and more aware. Because when you actually start to look at one thing, rather than having the mindfulness go all over the place, it's as if that happens, the mindfulness illuminates that thing and builds up its energy on it, and you start to really see into something very wonderfully, very well. And this is a practice which hopefully many of you will do later on in this retreat, just practicing just the muscles of insight. You can take anything, whether it's a little fly which is just walking on your robe, or whether it's a leaf from the bushes outside. Just stand there or sit there and just watch that one leaf and let mindfulness illuminate it. Until awareness gets so strong on that one little leaf, you just see so much of what's going on in that leaf. It's not just a green leaf, it's just a whole world in it. Then you're understanding the power of mindfulness. When you can sustain it on one thing, how it illuminates and releases a lot of the beauty in that object, it becomes fascinating just how much you can see, how much of interest, how much of wonder, how much of awe there is in just a tiny leaf. That's when you start to play with mindfulness. You start to play with this power of mindfulness, which is blissful and which can see deeply into things. And when, of course, if when you're looking at a leaf you start thinking about what you can have for dinner, then you can't sort of see very clearly into it. Or if you start looking into a leaf and you start getting dull into sloth and torpor, or you're wondering, are people looking at me? Do they think I'm somehow strange? All those sorts of distracting thoughts will obviously break the spell and break the sustained attention. But if you can sustain your attention on these things, this is what you're learning with this practice of mindfulness in this meditation. It's amazing just what you'll see in the world, and just how the world will start to open up, become very beautiful and very fascinating and very wonderful. And that's just in the world outside. If you develop the ability to sustain mindfulness, sustain attention on something for long periods of time, then you really do have the ability to bore into something with insight and to see deeply into its nature. And if you're one who wants to discover some of these deep truths of existence, if you don't want to just take it on faith from the books or from the teachers, you want to find out for yourself, this is how you find out. This is how you get enlightenment experiences. Through developing this powerful mindfulness and pointing it to some of the interesting veins of wisdom, especially into the nature of your mind. If you can sustain attention on your mind, bore into it as it were, then that's a whole mine of wonderful jewels of deep insight. So this is a way, like, of mindfulness, of what it actually is and how to develop it. And in particular, this morning, I was giving the instructions of how to set up mindfulness at every stage of this meditation, every stage of the day even. Give yourself clear instructions. Know what you're supposed to be doing. Through giving yourself those clear instructions, and just watch this mind do its job of keeping you at your work, and it becomes fascinating. That's all you need to do. Sometimes that I've described this type of quiet meditation as letting go of the doer, and sometimes that's been quite confusing to some people. What do you mean letting go of the doer? This is how you let go of the doer. You do a little bit of doing at the right time, and then you let go and allow the doing to happen. And little by little, you can let go of the doer more and more in this way. All that chatter, all that ordering, which is 90% of the thinking mind, always giving yourself instructions, telling yourself what to do, getting on your back when you fail. Think. That's one of the biggest problems for meditators. This is how to overcome it. It's a time to think at the very beginning of each stage by giving yourself clear instructions. Then you can let go, because you see the mind doing all of the work. You understand, you realize you don't need to say anymore. You can be quiet. As your meditation develops, not only does the area which mindfulness covers get less and less and less, but mindfulness also increases and gets sharper and sharper and sharper. And one of the marvellous things about this meditation, as you sharpen the mindfulness, you find it has different levels to it. So the last thing I want to say about mindfulness, the different levels of mindfulness. You do actually find out the mindfulness of daily life is just so dull. It's got very little sharpness at all. When you start developing meditation, you get sharper and sharper. By sharper and sharper, I mean you can sustain it on very refined areas of existence, and it's very bright as well. However, as you develop the meditation deeper and deeper, you'll find you have to develop the mindfulness to become more and more subtle. As you're developing these different levels, it happens so often that you lose the focus of awareness. For example, if it's the breath, you lose the breath. And often people ask, why? What has happened there? And what has happened is that the breath has become soft and become subtle, but the mindfulness is still coarse and hasn't been able to keep up with the development of the breath. If that's happened, you have to go back to the stage before. It happens when you have the full awareness of the breath, at stage 4. Sometimes the breath disappears and a nimitta can come up, but you can't sustain that nimitta. And again, because the mindfulness necessary, the quality of mindfulness necessary to sustain a nimitta has to be very refined. You haven't built up that refined mindfulness yet. You have to go back to the stage before. If a nimitta comes up, go back to the full awareness of the breath, which is a coarser object which the mindfulness can develop on. But if your mindfulness is fully developed at this fourth stage, when a nimitta comes up, the mindfulness can handle that more refined object. You find this mindfulness becomes more and more subtle. It can sustain attention even on the most subtle objects once it's learned how to sustain attention on the coarser objects. And at each of these different stages, the mindfulness has a higher quality to it, far more subtle, far more refined. I gave this simile the other day to one of the people interviewing. It's like the difference between my surgeon with a scalpel, sort of say, on the brain, and someone peeling potatoes. You need quite a different refinement of the way you peel. And you know, if you move straight from potatoes onto being a brain surgeon, you're going to make a lot of mess. Same as if you move too quickly from the breath onto the samadhi nimitta, you know, that you're going to lose it. You're not going to be able to keep it there. So you very carefully move the mindfulness